You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Robbins. We're entering the home stretch now with just one more month left of Kissing Basilisks, the serial. Keep an eye on my Patreon in July and August as I have a whole bunch of exciting special offers coming soon and just a lot of new books being released over the second half of 2020. They've stacked up a bit. So that's going to be exciting. Okay, Kissing Basilisks, Chapter 17. Ferdinand Chauvelin is not at home. It was all gone. Ferd knew it was gone before he opened his eyes. Null. A cruel, technical term. No one had said it in front of him for the first month after the accident, but he knew they were thinking it. He noticed every time there was a pause, every time the word was ever so carefully not said in his presence. And the worst part? It was his fault. All of it. Of course you could blame the university. You could blame the heavy course load, the pressure placed on him by the professor in charge. You could always, an easy out, blame the parents. When it first sank into Ferd, the first time around, that his powers were gone, he braced himself to defend Professor Hecate and her methods. His father was High Quill of the Basilisk Board, so unlikely to bring any of his influence to bear on the university itself. But firing the professor in charge, finding someone to scapegoat, would be just like him. Ferd was ready for that. He'd prepared a speech for when his father ramped up the blame game. A simple, firm, humble speech, making it absolutely clear that it had been Ferd's choice to push the experiments with his magic harder and faster. His choice to go days without eating and sleeping as he neared the results he was hoping for. All 100% entirely his fault. He never had to deliver the lecture, as it turned out. Weeks, months passed, and no one even slightly threatened Professor Hecate's job. Finally, it sank in that his father had always known exactly who to blame. Ferd's eyes snapped open. "Vale." "She's fine," said a low voice, almost as familiar as Ferd's own. "You know she always needs extra beauty sleep." Jules Nightshade moved into view, looking drawn and miserable. There was a pressure that Ferd realised after a moment was Nightshade's hand squeezing his. He couldn't tell, he realised, if Jules still had Viola's magic or his own. It was lonely to realise he might never be able to tell. He'd have to ask. He wasn't going to ask. "What happened?" Ferd asked instead. No one answered him. They were sitting on the lush, carpeted floor of the Cloven Library, propped up by chairs. Ferd lifted his fuzzy head to look around and saw a cluster of their friends nearby, all looking troubled, severely underdressed for uni. "Casual Friday," he croaked. "The man of the hour," said an unfamiliar voice. A man with dark eyes and a sculpted 5 o'clock shadow, hopefully a professor, leaned in, peering at Ferd. "Your magic is gone," the bloke informed him. "So yes, a professor, or possibly an overqualified librarian." "Obviously," said Ferd, trying for sarcasm. It mostly came out miserable. "It wasn't even mine," he added, because he wasn't entirely stupid. "Not this time around," agreed the probably professor. He moved back out of Ferd's field of vision, and that was when Ferd saw it. A void crystal, twice the size of any he'd ever seen in a private home, hovering in midair. Dark shapes swirled inside it, and Ferd knew shadow magic when he saw it. "Mine," something inside him whispered, but that was the craving of an addict, not reality. "Did that come out of me?" he asked. of all three of you," said the professor steadily. "You weren't quite yourselves for a moment there." Terrified, Ferd clutched at Jules. "Did they take yours too?" "Steady," said Jules. He held up a hand, formed a perfect spiral of snowflakes, fanning out across his palm. "All's well that ends well." Ferd was overcome by a choking sob. If his friends had lost their magic too, and it was his fault. "Hey," said Jules, and gave him a brisk hug, something they rarely did. "Settle, Petal." Ferd clung to him for a moment, hating the feeling of being weak, but he could really do with a hug right now. "Words of small syllables," he said finally. "I'm not as smart as I used to be." "Lying," sighed Jules. Ferd looked around for Viola. It wasn't enough to be told she was all right, especially if she wasn't here at his side. "Asleep?" His eyes moved over the clustered group of people he had bizarrely come to think of as family over the last year or so. Hebe and Holly curled up together in chairs, both looking unreadable. Juniper hovered behind them, as did May. Sage was propped up in a sprawling pose on the floor, with blood soaking one leg of his shorts, splattered up the front of his fake geek girl t-shirt, but no visible wounds. He gave a half wave. Deck sat beside Sage, wearing pyjama pants and a t-shirt that looked like it had been conjured out of thin air. To Ferd's eye, unadulterated by a magic field of his own, it looked like someone had lightly coloured Deck's chest in with a grey lead pencil. Viola lay, eyes closed, with her head in Deck's lap. She was very still. "She has her magic, right?" Ferd asked anxiously. He couldn't feel it. Deck gave him a steady shrug because, yeah, they were in the same boat. Equally fucking helpless. Ferd had never really thought about it before now, that Viola had been dating someone else with magic for half a year or so. So unlike her. "She does," said Jules. "I can feel it, Jove. It's okay. Whatever Professor Guyliner here did with the void crystal switched our magics back, and, he indicated the void crystal with its tumbling, swirling shadows. "There's none of me in there." "It's the house magic," Hebe said quietly. Ferd looked back at her, startled. It wasn't like he had forgotten she was here, just he wasn't expecting them to be on speaking terms. He had a lot of holes in his memory between the summer solstice and now, but he was pretty sure everything he wasn't remembering added up to a whole truckload of terrible boyfriend behaviour. "Ex-boyfriend," he remembered with a wince. "Fuck." "Professor Fordyce was going to explain," said Juniper, speaking up and then blushing wildly when everyone looked at her. She held up a notebook. "I'm taking minutes." "Glad to know someone's organised," said Jules briskly. "Still practically draped over Ferd, but he'd better not try and move away anytime soon." Jules was all that was keeping Ferd in one piece. Why wasn't Viola awake yet? "You said this was a basilisk triangle," Hebe went on. "I assume that's some kind of fancy magic that only certain privileged members of the university get to learn about, like this library." "Oh, of course. They were in the Cloven. Ferd had spent most of first year in here, trying to impress Professor Hecate with how advanced he was. He'd have been better off in the long run going to concerts and getting off his face every weekend like the other firsties." "It's an ancient ritual," said Professor Fordyce. "If Ms. Vale was awake, she could share her notes from practical mythology." "I'm awake," muttered Viola, sounding grumpier than the rest of them put together. "I'm fine." Her eyes, slow to catch up with the rest of her, fluttered open. Deck laid a hand on her shoulder. "Maybe don't sit up yet," he suggested mildly. Viola being Viola, she sat up immediately and glared at everyone for daring to think she might need a minute to recover. "Basilisk triangles," she declared. "A ridiculously overpowered and outdated bonding spell. They were called Medea triangles for centuries, though the most famous one was..." "Oh, I know that one, said Holly, unexpectedly. Morgan Le Fay and her sisters. Don't look at me like that, she added to her twin, when Hebe did not try to hide her surprise. Pegasus did an amazing song about Morgan Le Fay. We were going to cover it at our next gig. The spell was resurrected and popularised by Isadora Tlaeli, one of the founders of the Basilisk Board here at Belladonna University, Professor Fordyce went on. Viola sagged back a bit against deck, still doing her best to look like she was completely fine. It took everything Ferd had not to crowd her, to demand more information. He only had Nightshade's word for it that her magic was back to normal. The professor continued. She used it to bond her magic to that of her close friends, Belstar Cloven and Saranac Cavastel. It gave them a vast resource of shared magic to tap into, allowing them to exchange, borrow, and amplify each other's power. Sage coughed. Didn't Isadora Tlaeli disappear on campus during a basic resurrection lecture like 100 years ago? And Saranac Cavastel's the one who blew himself up with... It's a very unstable spell, said Fordyce, unsmiling. But it became popular for a while before it was finally forbidden in the College of the Real. Still, the original spell would have been kept among the archives of the Tlaeli family, as well as here at the university. We're never allowed to destroy information about magic, even when it might be in the world's best interest. Ferd cleared his throat, feeling sick. The Tlaeli family owned our house before we moved to Australia, he admitted. Professor Fordyce met his gaze. I'm aware, he said, with a slight hint of sympathy in his tone. I actually studied the rise and fall of Isadora Tlaeli for my doctorate. I thought it was a terribly clever way to get a foothold into teaching here, at the infamous Belladonna U. She was a legend. What aren't you telling us? Asked Jules. Ferd could feel the tense line of his body beside him, vibrating with tension. I thought you peeled this triangle spell off us. So we're okay, right? I feel normal. They both turned to look at Viola, who flipped her middle finger and then set fire to it, to prove her point. I hope so, said Fordyce. The Basilisk Triangle is one of the most powerful and intricate of all warlock bonding spells. But it is supposed to be cast voluntarily. I am assuming that none of you consented to this particular spell. I can see why Mr. Chauvelin's family may have believed it was a viable option to return some measure of his magic in combination with those of Ms. Vale and Mr. Nightshade. I can even see how sacrificing the magic of their house to substitute for his contribution may have worked in theory. But the idea of imposing a bond like this entirely from the outside is ludicrous. Failure was inevitable unless at least one of you participated in the casting. Ferd felt cold all over. Slowly he turned to look at Jules. His friend gave him a filthy look. Don't you dare. Don't you fucking dare suspect us, Chauvelin. Vale and I knew how you felt about all those shitty attempts to fix you. But if you thought it was for the best, Ferd whispered. It wasn't for the best, said Jules. We're not idiots. You think Vale would have gone into something like a deeply problematic historical bonding spell without cross-checking 10 million footnotes first? She'd still be doing the research. Relief slowly flooded over Ferd. He knew that. He did know that. I'm sorry. You're a dick, Jules told him, which was news to exactly no one in this room. We're not the ones who've been acting out of character, moping about, being all pissy and weird and kissing people they shouldn't, and... He paused, glancing back at the professor. Wait, you mentioned the kissing before. Is that relevant? Ah, students, said Professor Fordyce with a patronising smile. It's amazing any of you get any work done at all. I believe from our current pool of information, he waved his hand around the group, this particular Basilisk Triangle spell was established at the summer solstice. It would have had some effect on the focal subject, Mr. Chauvelin. Erratic behaviour, dark impulses, patches of memory loss, definitely best not mixed with alcohol. But to be fully triggered over the three of you? Kissing is one of the ritual traditions, yes. How long before any of you felt magical repercussions?
Ask after the kissing, Jules asked.
Yes, Mr. Nightshade, after the kissing.
Not sure.
A few hours, the next morning.
Jules looked at Ferd, who nodded reluctantly.
The next morning, he agreed, which of course was this morning, though this morning felt like it had lasted a year already.
There you are, then.
The professor looked smug at having figured it all out. It made Ferd want to thump him.
Would it have worked? He blurted out.
Fordyce blinked. Would what have worked?
The basilisk triangle.
If it hadn't... If the house hadn't gone mental on us, if Jules and Viola's powers hadn't swapped like that, was there any chance it could actually have worked?
Under controlled circumstances, mused the professor. With full consent and knowledge from all three parties, four really, including the house. I would say the chances of the basilisk triangle holding steady and giving all three of you equal access to magic are somewhere between 4% and 15%.
Ferd felt numb all over. Those were not good odds.
What were the chances it would kill us all?
All three of you were very lucky, Professor Fordyce said in a low voice.
Ferd swallowed hard. My parents didn't just sacrifice their house's magic. They're willing to sacrifice Nightshade and Veil? That's so far beyond not okay.
They might not be the only ones, said a soft voice.
He turned around and stared at Hebe. She stared back at him, not looking nearly as sympathetic as everyone else right now.
The professor said it's unlikely anyone would attempt to cast that spell without some form of consent, she said, her mouth a thin line.
You're the one who can't remember what you did on the summer solstice.
Are you absolutely certain you weren't in on this?
Somehow a part of him had been hoping she would forgive him for everything that had happened over the last few weeks.
But no, apparently not.
You really think me capable of that? He demanded.
Jules coughed sharply into his hand, reminding Ferd that he had been the one making similar accusations only a few minutes ago.
Everyone looked shattered. Juniper had stopped writing in her notebook.
"What is the meaning of this?" boomed a voice that was usually only heard in formal university ceremonies and occasionally at very fancy cocktail parties. Professor Archibald Chalmsnare VII, Vice-Chancellor of the College of the Real, marched into the library as if he owned the place. Fair enough, really. With a crowd of familiar adults at his back. Board members, every single one of them. Gulliver Loxley and his great-uncle Hadrian, Sorrel Merriweather, Norris Asteria, Victor Vale, Irene Nightshade, and making an astonishingly rare appearance, her ex-husband West. And, of course, to top it all off, a furious-looking Nicholas and Marine Chevalin. More than half the active board, a quorum, Ferd thought, with the part of his brain that was always cynical about his father's choices, though apparently not cynical enough.
"I see we've found the thieves," said Ferd's father, with his usual brand of obnoxious confidence.
Shock crept over Ferd, like he was having an out-of-body experience. "Oh," he realised, as the board members converged on Professor Fordyce and the Void Crystal, with an agenda of their own. We're fucked.
Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.